Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Meet the Mets, step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife, guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball, knocking those home runs over the wall.
Sports fans, today is Wednesday, October 9th. Welcome to the Sports King from Queens. This is episode 131. I'm Gino, joined by Kevin and Darren. You can catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to send us some questions, some comments. We'll be sure to respond. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get started. We got a lot of sports to talk about tonight. We're going to start it off with baseball. We're going to go right to the Mets, who are about an hour ago, advanced to the division series. I'm sorry, the championship series. They take out the Phillies in four games, win game one. They lost game two, came back, won game three, won game four tonight. Down 1-0 going to the bottom of the sixth. And Mr. Lindor, it's a grand slam, puts them up 4-1. Mets closer seals the deal. Mets are advanced. Kev, let's start it off.
Wow. What? I mean, what an incredible freaking 2 weeks here of Mets baseball. It's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it's been now. I mean, just the ups and downs and the roller coaster. It feels like every move that Mendoza's making, almost every one of them seems to be working. I mean, you go back to game one where, you know, all of a sudden Kodai Senga's starting game one. He gives you the two innings. He gives up the leadoff home run to Schwarber in the series. And I don't think we ever heard from Schwarber the rest of the series after that. He gave you two. Peterson pitched well in relief. The rest of the bullpen did his job. And the Mets, you know, six runs late, singled them to death. A lot of key two strike hits, single, sack fly, single, sack fly. You know, that type of rally that they just kept pouring on. The only blemish on the series was game two, of course. You know, they had the 3-0 lead. Philly came back and tied. Mets came back and retook the lead. Unfortunately, in that game, Diaz blew that one. You know, he came in relief a little early. And, you know, I think Mendoza made the right move when he made it to bring Diaz in when he did, because he was facing the heart of the lineup in a jam. And I thought it was the right move at the time. I'll agree with it. It didn't work. And then McGill gives up the run in the ninth inning. And, you know, as a Mets fan, you go, would have been nice to be up 2-0. Came back to the Queens 1-1. Okay, still coming home. Game three was Tuesday night, and it was a pretty solid routine win for the Mets. I mean, it was just, you know, drama-free. They scored runs early, tacked on late. You had a beautiful game from Manaea. I mean, he goes 7-plus. He was shut out for seven.
Manaea was awesome, Kev.
Manaea was terrific. And then tonight, you know, Quintana battled. Tonight was scary early on because bases loaded in the first, do not score. Bases loaded in the second, do not score. And all of a sudden, you know, Philly gets that one run, gets the lead in the fourth inning. And it's like, oh, geez, we're going to lose this because we blew so many chances. And we load up the bases once again. And up steps Francisco Lindor and the Mets MVP, the guy who will be the runner-up in the National League MVP race. Comes through with his second big home run in the last 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And sends the Mets line to the championship series. And of course, in true Met fashion, you know, Diaz comes in, walks the first two guys, and you're like, oh, geez, here we go. But he recovered, got two fly ball outs, and then struck out Schwarber. And boy, that bat scared me. And you know, they, especially when you put up the stat, Schwarber career versus Diaz, 0-9 with 7 strikeouts. And my wife is looking, oh sure, they're putting that up, it's gonna jinx them. It always does. And they survive and they move on. The big thing this series is the Philly bullpen sucked. No other way of putting it. The Mets scored 17 runs against the Phillies bullpen. As far as the hitting, Harper hit, Castellanos hit, nobody else did. Their 5-9 hitters hit, like, I think the stat was somewhere in the neighborhood of 4-50 for the series. They had no other contributions besides Harper and Castellanos. And the Mets move on. They continue this magical ride. Guys, what else do you want to say?
Well, you covered a ton of it. But, I mean, the fact was, you're right. I mean, it was the reason the Mets won, and there was reason to be nervous tonight because they did leave so many runners stranded in scoring position early on against a junk baller like Suarez, who was just sitting there and nickel and diming them and putting people on. And you're like, how are they letting them get off the hook? But the problem was for the Phillies, they could not put runs together either, except for that game two. And, you know, you said it best, the Philly bullpen was awful. It's easily the most overrated bullpen I've ever seen. Not one guy could get a big out in a big spot. I was stunned, by the way, and I know the reason why they don't do it, but that they did not go to a lefty to face Lindor. Because I would have been much more happy having a lefty face Vientos than a righty facing Lindor for how clutch Lindor's been. And Vientos hit the game-tying homer in game two. It's not like he doesn't do it either.
Yeah.
But I would have went, even though Strom was crap, I would have probably went to him there. And giving him a shot to turn Lindor around because that's the guy I can't let beat me.
Agreed.
And the Mets and the 100%. Phillies beat me. And Lindor just, you know, if you watched that game and you didn't think he was going to get a hit, you're crazy. There was no way he wasn't getting a hit in that spot. You felt, even as a Met fan like yourself sitting there nervously watching, you felt confident Lindor was going to come through there, no?
He's done it too many times. Over the last
exactly, Gino, you felt the same way, right?
Oh, listen, I'm not sure if I thought he was going to hit a homer, but I had no doubt that he was getting a base hit there.
He was going to hit the ball hard somewhere.
Whether
the worst, he was going to hit a deep sack fly to somebody. That was the worst that was going to happen, in my opinion.
I figured he was getting a base hit, whether they were scoring one run or two, I wasn't sure, but there was no doubt in my mind he was getting a base hit there. So, you know, Kev. When they beat the Brewers, I came out and told you I didn't like the way they were playing. Now it's completely shifted now because exactly what I criticized them for that wild card round is not what they did here, right? They got good pitching. They played good baseball. This wasn't, you know, shots in the ninth when you gave up a lead. That's not what this was about. You know, especially tonight where – you're down 1-0, and exactly, you know, Darren, I find it funny that I feel like this is the way the Mets are playing. This is what the Yankees used to do to teams in the late 90s. They go against the good starters, and they let you take them. They take a lot of pitches. They would do almost nothing or whatever. They would hit the ball, and then all of a sudden, as soon as that starter was out, you attacked the crap out of the other team's bullpen. You got base hits. You took walks. You took a lot of pitches. You put them on their heels, and then boom, somebody hit a home run. And then boom, somebody hits a double. And this, I feel like this is exactly what I saw with them. That's exactly what we used to see with those old Yankee teams. You didn't care. We used to face Pedro. We used to face Randy Johnson. And the whole formula was the same. We're going to take them even through six. And part of that, Kev, is you getting good starting pitching. And that's what allows you to do that stuff. And it's you. Mania was – I watched it. Mania was unbelievable that night. I mean, he was fantastic.
He was great.
So
he was huge because the fact with Mania was that you knew his last two starts were subpar for Mania for the whole season. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you say, when's he going to bounce back? Or is he going to bounce back? Because he has had a couple of bad seasons in a row, like four. And then all of a sudden you look at what he did and he bounced back in a huge way against a big time lineup.
And that's taking nothing away from Quintana tonight because Quintana was excellent also. But the other night, Manaea was just in total control. It was like, wow, he's like, forget it, on another level tonight.
Manaea was in control. Severino, until the sixth, you know, he gave up the homer to Harper. It happens. I think he lost concentration. He gave up the one to Castellanos to tie it. You know, Severino for 5+ was terrific as well.
Oh, excellent.
And in game one, you know, between Senga, give him, you know, the two innings with only the one thing, the one home run to Schwarber. David Peterson, huge this series. The three innings in game one to keep him there. And then tonight, when it came time to get through, you know, they did start the lefties against Quintana tonight. So he got, you know, the Stott, Marsh at the bottom, back up to the top, got through Schwarber, got through Harper, and just huge so that you only needed Diaz for three outs.
Yeah.
I mean, five huge innings for Peterson in the series in the two relief appearances he made.
Yeah, listen, Schwarber, Harper, and Castellanos and Trey Turner did very little in this series. The Met pitchers held them down as much as they could, and they advance on. They advance on now. So,
listen, a lot to like about this team. The Philly bullpen might be the most overrated thing with all the all-stars they had this year. You got to be kidding me with these guys. The moment was way too big for them. It just was. They had nobody. They had nobody in any spot that looked decent. Even in the game that they won, they blew the two-run lead in the ninth.
Yep. The lead, yeah.
And you know what? And it just so happened that they were able to come back. Now, the only concern you had going in was that Vientos wasn't hitting, and now he's hitting. Marte continues to hit. Well, Alonso is hitting.
I mean,
Alonso's hitting. Yeah, there's a lot of things to like about what you're seeing from these guys. So, you know, look out, LA or San Diego or whoever's next. So it's going to be a good run in the next series.
And unlike the Phillies, you know, they got chipping from, you know, Iglesias in game three had a big hit there. Winker with a big home run. JD Martinez had a couple of RBIs. Alvarez had one or two big hits. Taylor's been big, you know, between that one play he made from center field to throw out, I think it was Marsh at second base. You know, his defense, plus he's had a hit or two there as well. I mean, they're getting contributions up and down the lineup.
Yeah. Yep.
No. Right now, it's a deep team. Let's see how we do in the LCS.
We'll see which California city the Mets will be going to for Sunday.
I believe it's Sunday.
It's Sunday.
Yep. All right.
All right. Crosstown, let's talk Yankees. So Yankees win game one. Lose game two. Game three is tonight. They are tied at two, going to the bottom of the seventh. Game one, Cole wasn't great. Darren, feel free to jump in whenever you want here.
I will, my friend.
Cole was not good in game one. He was okay. He gave you six. They had to go through four relievers to get through the next three innings. Weaver got the save. They scored six runs, but two of them were on bases-loaded walks. They took eight walks off Kansas City pitchers. They had nine hits in the whole game. Not big offensive performance at all. We get to game two. Perez homers off Rodon in a four-run fourth. You know, they get seven hits, two runs in the game, the Yankees. After Rodon leaves, after 3 2/3, it takes seven relievers to get us through the game. They just haven't looked sharp. Tonight they're tied at two. Judge has done nothing. Soto's done very little. They have three hits through seven innings. The Kansas City pitchers seem to be keeping them off. Lugo's got them completely off balance tonight, that's for sure. Darren.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you watch this team in game one, you said you had to win the Cole game, and he didn't do enough, really. He got bailed out by the Royals not pitching well. He was not good at all. And, you know, he knew it. I mean, it wasn't like it was a mystery to him. He knew that he didn't pitch well, but, you know, you needed more from him than you got. I mean, Soto's found his way on base here and there. It's not like he's been, like, invisible. Judge, you're sitting there. You know it's bad when you're sitting there saying, that was a good at-bat. It was a good fly out to the warning track. It was a good line drive out. I mean, that's how bad it is right now for Judge. He's not hitting at all.
But with Soto, you haven't seen him hit two doubles in the gap. You haven't seen him hit a blast one out of the park. So, you know, although he's been okay, he's just been okay.
You know, problem is, they're pitching a little bit around them to face Judge. You believe that? That's what's happening. Yeah. They're not giving him much to hit because they don't care if they walk him. And Soto, we said it when the season started, he's going to be a guy that does not care if he takes a walk in a big spot. He does not care. He will not press. He will not leave his zone. He will not try to do things that he doesn't think he can do. We said this when they signed him, and that's who he is. So now when you're sitting there saying, well, we need Soto to get a big hit, well, that pitch was a little bit outside, so I'm going to take it. I'm not going to try to drive it the other way. You know, I mean, the Yankees right now, you know, the entire playoff right now, if you look at every single division, well, the Mets actually advanced to 3-1, but every lower seed is up 2-1 except the Yankees.
Yeah.
Right. Every lower seed was up. Okay. And the reason is, you know, that baseball's parity is probably better than it's ever been. One and two, these guys are coming off an off week, which is a little strange for them. So now you're trying to get yourself back into a groove against a team that's been playing the whole time. So you go through all these things and you say, all right, there's, you know, there's reasons, but it's not acceptable reasons. The Yankees can't lose this series. The Yankees can't not make it to the World Series. They're not playing against a team that can compete with them. You look, and we'll get into Cleveland, Detroit later, but I have so many things to rip on that. And you know, you sit here and you watch the Yankees and you just haven't seen, I mean, like Rodon Cruz for 3 innings. In the fourth inning, he ran into something. It was Schmidt tonight. He cruised through 4 innings. In the fifth inning, he ran into something. It's like, you know, you can't expect the starters to be perfect.
Exactly.
You know, you got to give them a cushion. This team has to be able to put up 4 or 5 runs in a game, not 2. And especially that's the problem.
And I think especially with the amount of time they had off. You know, they, you know, listen to the Mets game earlier. They talk about Suarez. You know, he hasn't started since, you know, whatever the date it was. He threw 2 innings in a simulated, in a intra-squad scrimmage game. That doesn't, come on. That's going to be the bulk of his work in the last 2 weeks. And all these times,
the Mets did tonight's show. He had 30 pitches in the first inning.
Yeah, you know, 16-2, and you know it's every higher seed faces this with the way this playoffs are set up.
Yeah,
too many days off for them.
Yeah,
where it'll benefit is if you have a major injury with a guy coming back, and usually it's not that week. You know what I mean? It's usually, we haven't seen it yet. Anyway, I can't say usually. In two years, we haven't seen a guy that wasn't going to play if he played earlier show up for the first round of the series, or no one notable that stands out. But I mean, you watch this team and you just feel like there's a little bit of flatness. Chisholm shouldn't be talking, let's be honest. But the fact of the matter is, to have a Yankee with a personality, isn't awful, but you just wish he would talk after the series, not after game one. Like, they got lucky in game two. What? Lucky? They beat you. Lucky. Lucky you lost. You played 9 innings. They scored more runs than you by a few, not by one. It's not lucky. They outplayed you. I don't know what you were looking for. So, you know, I know he's excited to be here and all that type of stuff. And it is cool to have a Yankee with a personality because we really haven't had one in a long time. But at the same point in time, you just want professionalism and the bats have to wake up. They won't get past this series if the bats don't wake up, because the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, Kansas City is able to go on regular rest now in game four. With their starters that they want to. I mean, everybody's able to do that because of the 2 days off. So it's not like their ace was the guy to go to, but they'll be able to get Reagans in there in game 2 and 5, and that's a big deal.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's something that you have to look for. And the Yankees get the same luxury with you know, Cole and Rodon. To be able to get them to pitch games 4 and 5 if they want to, even though Heel is listed as the guy that's supposed to start tomorrow. But we're going to see what happens tonight. If they lose tonight, I wouldn't be surprised if they went right to Cole, you know, with your season on the line. I don't know if they definitely will, but I could see it happening just because do you want to go down with Heel on the hill or do you want to go down with Cole on the hill? Do you want to go down with the guy you're paying all that money to win?
Has to be
Cole. It's what would you say?
It has to be Cole.
It has to be. I don't think you have any choice. If
you're down 2-1, it has to.
Now, at the same time, you could choose to start Heel in 5. You could choose to start Rodon in 5. You can go either way, but I think that they would probably go Rodon in 5. And I think that we would basically skip the whole thing here. I think that, you know, we would go with three starters, and Clark Schmidt got the three spot, which would be a little shocking, even though he wasn't awful. He just he ran into a little trouble at the bottom of the order. Kansas City's scrappy. And the thing about that the Yankees are lucky as hell about is that Bobby Witt's not hitting either. Exactly. Judge isn't hitting. Witt isn't hitting. If Witt was hitting, because he's come up in big spots, they'd be up 2-0.
Yeah.
If Judge was hitting, the Yankees would be up 2-0. But at the same time, neither one is doing it. And it stands out. The two guys for the MVP, you sit there, you watch the National League, you watch, Lindor hitting it all over the yard as an MVP candidate. Otani hasn't done much since that first swing, but you never know when he's going to turn it back on. But, the two guys in the American League that are the top two have done absolutely nothing so far. That can turn at any point as well. So, listen, okay. I mean, I'm still confident in the Yankees, but there's a ways to go here.
All right. You mentioned it briefly, Detroit and Cleveland. Detroit's up 2-1. They beat Cleveland 3-0 today. Darren, tell me about Detroit-Cleveland.
Well, here's where I get upset about baseball, and this is where I get all pissed off. All right, so Detroit is up 2-1. And listen, we thought so. The Indians haven't scored in 2 games and 4 innings, okay? They haven't put a run on the board. They won 7-0. They've been shut out 2 in a row. Game 2, they threw donuts as well. It was a 9th-inning home run given up by Class A, a 3-run homer that kind of put it over the top. But when you look at the way Cleveland's managed this series, okay, BB gets pulled after in game 1, where they were up 5-0, gets pulled after 76 pitches with 4 2/3 innings, having given up 4 hits and 2 walks, okay? Then you go to game 2 in a 0-0 game. Boyd gets pulled after 4 2/3 innings, 72 pitches. Today, you know, what did he go, 3 innings today? I'm blanking on who it was today. That went 3 innings. I mean,
Cobb.
I don't understand. Cobb goes 3. I mean, what are you doing now? I mean, you're up 5-0, and you got to pull BB after 4 2/3 with 76 pitches. This is your number one starter. I don't get it. These guys rely so much on bullpens to get everybody to be great, and sometimes it works out fantastically. It worked out for Detroit today, but the simple fact of the matter is, you're asking everyone to be on and everyone to be good, and I hate that. I mean, I just don't understand what they're trying to pull off with that stuff. I mean, you know, Detroit, we knew was scrappy. We knew Cleveland. We thought Cleveland would be scrappy. We figured Ramirez is the best player in the series. He ain't doing anything, right? Nobody's done a thing on Cleveland in 2 games and 4 innings. They haven't scored a run. I mean, you know, they can't punch a run across. This is where the problems lie right now. But I just don't understand. You are the favorite in the series, and you're managing scared. You don't have a starter go 5? When nobody had neither one had given up a run. None of the three of them had given up a run.
I think that's the point. It's not like they were, it's not like they had given up 3 or 4 runs and you were starting to get scared. They've given up no runs.
In 1984, the Padres starting pitchers in the World Series, none of them made 5 innings. Why? Because they all got rocked. This is three guys with no runs against them, they can all get pulled. One guy, I mean, listen, and none of them are starters. These guys, like the game starters, these guys are all starting pitchers. I don't understand what they're doing. I just can't believe it. Detroit, on the other hand, again, their offense isn't explosive, but they, like they've done all the second half of the season, they do enough to get by. And that's what's happening for them. And you know what? Good for them. And the way Cleveland's managing, I hope Detroit wins this damn series. Any points on that? Because it drives me nuts watching this game. We'll watch this series. I guess not.
No, you said everything right. I mean, jeez. You know, you're watching, you know, hate to keep going back to it, but, you know, you watch Wheeler pitch, you know, 7 beautiful innings. He's pulled because he's got 119 pitches. But he gave you 7 shutout innings. That's the time you pull a guy. like you said, 7, you know, you have 5-0, 6-0, whatever it is.
Stanton goes yard.
Oh, wow.
Because Judge can't do it. Stanton does. So 3-2. 3-2 Yankees.
I'm glad he hit the home run.
You get to rely on the bullpen now. So there you go.
I'm glad he hit the home run because we know he can't run to first right now. So,
God. He stole a base earlier. They forgot about him. He stole second. First steal in 4 years for Stanton. So that was a funny moment.
So Detroit's up 2-1. And then in the other National League series, San Diego is up 2-1. San Diego in 3 games has scored 21 runs. The Dodgers have scored 14 runs. Darren, the Padres are your team, so why don't you start this one?
Well, the Dodgers are up 2-0 in their game right now tonight in game 4.
Yep.
But, okay, game 1 was interesting. The Padres jumped on them right away. Led 3-5-3, but neither Cease nor Yamamoto had it. Cease again doesn't have it tonight. Shohei hit a rocket 3-run homer to tie the game up. Machado went yard also, but he also made a crucial error that kind of opened up them falling behind in game 1. In game 2, the Padres rolled. Okay, they hit 6 homers. Which a bunch of them against the bullpen, but they still had a really good matchup against Flaherty. They kind of owned them. Darvish was outstanding. Went 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run. He was unbelievable. He was painting everything. I love when he's on because he throws like a variation of like 25 pitches or whatever it is. You always get the pitch clock variation, but, you know, he was really, really good. And that game started off with one of the more amazing things you'll see. Jurickson and Profar makes this catch in left field, and no one knows that he caught it because he's doing a little dance out there. And I thought he caught it, but I didn't know he caught it. And, you know, you're sitting there watching, then the camera comes off him, and then you see the ball get thrown in, and Betts is running around like he hit a homer. It's like the Padres are a very emotional team. So you see Tatis, he hits a home run. He stands there. You know, Shohei hit a home run. He threw the bat like he wanted to hit the Padres in the head. There's a lot of gamesmanship going on. Game 2, we had the delay because the Dodger fans were throwing things at Profar and Tatis, which was just kind of ridiculous a little bit. There was so many
Padres cool also hit. Padres also hit 6 home runs in that game.
Yep, 6 homers in that game. Tatis hit 2 of them. And then game 3, Padres jumped out 6-1, and then Hernandez hits a grand slam, cuts it to 6-5, and then both bullpens hold down, and nobody scores another run. I don't think the Padres got another hit. And I'm after the fourth, and I think that the Dodgers had 2 base runners after the fourth. So it was one of those things that the Pods jump out and take a 2-1 lead. Right now they're down 2-0 in game 4. So let's see what happens there. But one of the most interesting things for me is Tanner Scott. Can you imagine going through life as Tanner Scott in this series? You're only going to pitch to 3 guys every single night. You're going to pitch to Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman, except tonight Freeman is hurt and he's not playing. But these are the 3 guys you have to face every freaking night. No matter what, they're going to bring Scott in when those 3 guys are up. That's what it is. We used to make fun of Graham Lord having to face McGriff.
Three of the best hitters in the world.
Betts and Freeman. I mean, it's like, my God, that's like a gauntlet. And that's all this guy gets to do. And he's done okay so far, but let's see how it goes the rest of the way. I think the Padres are one of those teams. I've been following them all year. They've been a very magical team, as Kevin used before with the Mets, late in games all year long. Talked about Merrill and what he's done. Tatis hasn't been healthy all year. It's nice to see him rolling. And when he's on, and he hates the Dodgers, he plays so well against the Dodgers. You know, and the same thing with Machado. There's a lot to take in here with this series. Not 3-0. They've already gone to the pen.
Tatis is the kind of hitter that can just win you a series by himself. I mean, just the way he hits the ball. I mean, it's ridiculous. So,
they're up 2-1. You'd like to close it out tonight, not go to game 5, because if he goes to game 5, I guess anything can happen, but you know, there's a lot of good pitching on the Padres side. So if they can hold the lead, their bullpen is different than most in the fact that they have been proven all season from 6-9 to be really, really good. So we'll see what happens, but let's go Pods.
Kev, any comments on Padres Dodgers?
Let's go. As a Mets fan, let's go Dodgers in some ways.
I got you. Dodgers have less pitching.
Yeah, I think it's because of the pitching. That's why I'm saying that. And the Padres lineup is just deeper. Padres will hurt you 1-9. Dodgers will kill you 1-3. And then you go, but the Padres will hurt you 1-9.
Higashioka has got 3 homers in this series. He's yeah, 9. I'm just saying, he's 9.
And you know, it was very nice of the Padres to keep hitting balls into the sea so that the Dodgers fans could throw it back at the Padres.
Yeah, pretty much. 6 homers that night. That was 10-2. Yeah. But it's such an emotional series that people on the East Coast don't really know. And that's it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, it keeps me up way too late, to be honest with you. But I can't stop watching it because it's a fun series. But anyway.
All right.
I think we're gonna baseball.
Yeah, we're going to move to the NFL. We did a whole show about the Jets yesterday. That should be up and loaded today. So give that a listen. Week 5's over. So let's hit a couple of games, and then we'll just go through some stuff. So the Giants beat the Seahawks 29-20. Giants used a strong performance from Daniel Jones and a late touchdown on a game-winning attempt of a blocked field goal by Isaiah Simmons to beat the Seahawks. Giants had 420 yards in 37-plus minutes of possession. They got some big play out of Slayton and Tracy for the injured neighbors in Singleton. Daniel Jones was actually had a pretty good game, threw 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, listen, no neighbors, no Singletary, no worries, I guess, for the Giants. They've now won both their games on the road, and the only road loss they had was at Washington in a game that easily could have won that game. They lost their kicker early, yep. So you don't know how that would have ended up. They've been better on the road than at home so far. Jones was solid. Robinson was solid. Slayton was great. Tracy was great. The defense played great. Here's my question. You're the Seattle Seahawks, and you have the running backs that you have. You have Walker and you have Charbonnet. And they combined those two guys for 7 carries. And Geno had 4. So they had rushed the ball 11 times. I know you didn't have the ball for a long time.
How in the world
do you do that? How does Walker get 5 carries? Now, I'm not saying that he would have run amok, but it loosens everything else up. But the Giants' pass defense is not very good. If they have to bring a safety up, it becomes that much weaker.
And the week before, Walker scored 3 times.
Exactly.
He had 3 touchdowns the week before.
Giants D is better than Detroit's. I agree with you. Walker has to get touches, but you don't have to throw it to him all the time. You can just hand it to him. Let him go. But at the same time, listen, very impressed with the way the Giants came out and won in Seattle. They got embarrassed by the Seahawks last year. I don't know if you remember that Monday night game where they just got steamrolled at home.
Yep.
They came back and slapped them back in the face. Good job by the Giants. The blocked field goal was huge. It looked like Seattle was coming in for the tying field goal. And, you know, great leap over the middle. Easy block, scoop and score. And that was that. My biggest question on the game was not anything the Giants did, because I thought they played well. Was I don't understand how the Seahawks run 11 times in the entire game with the running backs that they have and everybody being healthy.
They should have handed it to Lynch.
All right, elsewhere. The Washington Commanders beat Cleveland 34-13. Jane Daniels led the Commanders on a rout of the Browns. They won their 4th in a row. Daniels was 14 for 25, 238. Plus, he had 11 carries for 82 yards. Robinson and Nichols had 3 running touchdowns. The Commanders outgained the Browns 434 to 212 total yards in the game. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was probably Daniel's weakest start since week 1. He wasn't great in this game. He wasn't as accurate as he's been, and yet it was never a game. If Cleveland doesn't bench Deshaun Watson, then who's watching these? What are you doing? He can't lead this team. There was a moment where they wanted to go for it on 4th down, and Watson walked off. Now, it ended up being because they had too many guys in the huddle, but he didn't explain that. He walked off like he was dejected. He doesn't even seem like he wants to be there. He seems like a shell of himself. He doesn't look like an athlete. He doesn't look like a thrower. He doesn't look like anything right now. Right now, Deshaun Watson looks like a guy that shouldn't be in the league right now. Yep. He looks like Kyle Wilson.
I agree.
Wilson. I'm going to say it's Kyle. Sorry. Zach
That's
Wilson.
Okay. Kyle Wilson's not in the league either.
Yeah, whatever. But I just don't understand it. But Washington right now, probably the funnest team in the league to watch, or one of them. People seem to, you know, you can't not enjoy watching this kid run around and play. And his inspirational offense has got the defense buzzing, and it's nice to see.
Okay. Baltimore beat Cincinnati 41-38 in one of the better games of the weekend. Lamar Jackson and Burrow exchanged touchdowns in a high-scoring game. Ravens beat the Bengals in overtime thanks to a 51-yard run by Derrick Henry and a game-winning 24-yard field goal by Justin Tucker. Bengals led by 10 multiple times in this game. Jackson had four touchdown passes. Tucker tied the game with a 56-yarder before securing the win in overtime. Darren?
Okay, oh, wait, so Cincinnati actually flat out gave the game away.
Yeah, Baltimore moves to 3-2. Cincinnati goes to 1-4. Sorry about that.
Cincinnati gave this game away, okay? They're driving to go up two scores with 3 minutes to go, and Burrow got picked. They're in the they're not in the red zone. They're in field goal range, and he gets picked by Humphrey on a little in slant. And can't happen. He threw five touchdowns, but he did throw that one pick. Yep. Chase was unguardable pretty much the entire game. Then they go for the kick in overtime to win it, and the holder drops the snap. He flat out dropped it. So they're like, oh, McPherson hooked it. Then you look at the replay. No, he's dropped the snap. So Cincinnati did everything in their power to lose this game. And they did, but they held Henry the whole game. Henry rushed for 90-something yards. He had 51 in overtime on the one run. He had 40 yards the rest of the game. They held him in check. Jackson played great. Burrow played great, no doubt about it. But this was Cincinnati's game, and they gave it away at home, which makes absolutely no sense. I don't know how the hell that happened.
You know, despite blowing in the fourth quarter, you know, they got the break when Lamar fumbled in overtime. And – you know, Bengals get 2 yards.
Everybody plays it conservatively. They run it three times and kick a 50-plus yarder. Nobody wants to go and try to make it a 30-yarder.
Like I said, Jace, 10 catches for almost 200. Higgins had 9 for 83. They both caught 2 touchdowns. You know, you got two. I mean, Chase had his best game of the year. Chase finally looked like Jamar Chase. He couldn't throw him to a once and get 10, 12, 15 yards instead of inside 40.
The interception was devastating because you're at 3 minute mark. Now you're sitting there just trying to get the 2-score lead and call it a game.
The only chance you have to lose
is an onside kick at that point. Only way you'd lose.
Yeah.
But instead he gets picked and that's the game.
Okay. Elsewhere, Houston beats Buffalo 23-20. Houston moves to 4-1, Buffalo to 3-2. C.J. Stroud threw for 331 yards. Kyme Fairbairn sealed the win with a 59-yard field goal as time expired. Despite the Bills rallying from a 20-3 deficit to tie the game late in the fourth quarter, we had some strange play calls at the end of this game for the Bills. With 32 seconds left in a tied game from their own 3, Buffalo throws 3 incomplete passes. They had a punt with 16 seconds left, and 2 plays later, Houston kicked the field goal to win. Sean McDermott got quoted after the game saying that he made the mistake, that they should have just knelt and set the game to overtime, but this is some really strange play calls. Darren?
Well, first of all, even if they wanted to kneel, they all they had to do was run the ball, because the fact of the matter is that, you know, they had 3 timeouts left. So you gave Houston the ball back in plus field position with 3 timeouts. And what was it, like 13 seconds or whatever it is? They didn't have to do much.
16.
To get in there. Fairbairn is a monster. Josh Allen, 9 for 30. I mean, those are worse numbers than anyone you ever see. He completed 30% of his passes. 30%. And Houston was rolling in this game. They were up 20-3. Buffalo kind of stormed back. You looked at it. Collins got hurt early for Houston. And I think that sets the tone for them because he's such a difference maker for them outside. And why I picked Buffalo not to make the playoffs, even though right now they look like they're the class of the AFC East because everybody else sucks, is because, A, I don't trust the receivers on Buffalo, and Shakir didn't play. And that was definitely a blow to them. And even though Cook is a bona fide RB1 now. And number two, I don't think this team can stop the run against a good running team. This was Houston, not a good running team without Mixon. Houston was still able to move the ball on the run and through the air. Stroud, he had a fumble and he had a pick, but for the most part, he played really well. You know, Diggs had a good day also, but 9 for 30 for 131 for Allen. Those are stats that you didn't see with him as a rookie, and they still almost won the damn game.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Arizona beat San Francisco 24-23. Kyler Murray, 50-yard touchdown run late in the game, set up a 35-yard field goal by filling kicker Chad Ryland, securing the Cards' comeback win. This despite blowing a 23-10 halftime lead. 49ers faltered in the second half. Key interception by Kazir White sealing the victory for Arizona. Arizona goes to 2-3. San Francisco now falls to 2-3. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, it was the San Francisco made big plays early with the defense and the special teams. Purdy was subpar. He had one touchdown, two interceptions. He's okay. I mean, listen, I'm not trying to pick on Josh Purdy, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that he had all these weapons and McCaffrey and Debo healthy, even though Debo played this week, and Ayuk and all this stuff. And without all those amazing players, Trent Williams, without these amazing players, you see what happens to a quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's not meant to insult Purdy because Brock is a good player, but it's you shouldn't lose to Arizona at home when you have a 13-point lead at the break. They didn't score a point in the second half. And, you know, Murray's playing well, and Connor's a beast when he gets the ball in big spots. There's a lot of things to like about it. So about the way Arizona's playing, but they shouldn't have never came back in this game, Kev.
And the move I hate, you know, early fourth, they scored the touchdown with 11:25 left to make it 23-19. They actually went for two. They made it.
Yeah, they did make it. Otherwise, it's the win, but they shouldn't do it.
Otherwise, you're settling for the game-time field goal. I'd still rather take the point. I'm sorry. And I know it worked for Arizona here in this case, but I don't like that move. I'm sorry.
No, you don't need to do it. You just don't need to do it there.
Okay, elsewhere, Minnesota, we know they moved to 5-0. We talked about that. They beat the Jets. Kansas City also moved to 5-0 with a 26-13 victory on Monday night over New Orleans. Atlanta on Thursday night beat Tampa Bay 36-30 in overtime. Dallas beat Pittsburgh Sunday night 2017 in Pittsburgh. Hail and rain and lightning and just crazy. The game was suspended for over an hour and a half before that game started. Green Bay beat the Rams 24-19. Denver had a good win against Vegas. Miami beat New England. Jacksonville picked up their first victory against Indianapolis. And Chicago beat Carolina. Any thoughts on any of those games, guys?
I mean, just the Chiefs are doing it with defense. You know, Mahomes didn't throw a touchdown pass. But Smith-Schuster and Hunt and their returns to Kansas City seem to be just fine. Hunt is not dissimilar to Pacheco in the way their running styles are. He's just a little bit older. So that's fine. The receiving thing is going to be a problem, though. Sorry, Kev, I didn't realize you were about to speak.
That's okay. Yeah, that, I was going to say, you know, at least one quarterback coming off an Achilles tear looks good. You know, Cousins threw for 500 yards and four touchdowns in the Thursday night win there. The Jaguars, it was 20-10 after three. The final wound up being 37-34. Wild fourth quarter there. Lawrence's first win in since last November as a starting quarterback.
Pierce scored two huge bombs in that game to get him back in it.
Yeah, they blew a 34-20 lead in the fourth quarter. They had to settle for Cam Little, 49-yard field goal to win it with 17 seconds left.
Ridiculous.
And with the Broncos beating the Raiders is making the switch to Aiden O'Connell.
Which they should have done in the beginning.
And after the thrilling Dolphins 15-10 win over the Patriots, unless you're a Dolphin or a Patriot fan, I don't think anybody else in the country watched that game. The Patriots got to make the move to May this week.
Yep. Saw that. All right. That's week five. Week six coming up. Couple of games. San Francisco plays Seattle Thursday night. Bears play the Jaguars Sunday morning in London. Ravens at my Commanders. Packers play the Cardinals. That should be a good game. Falcons play the Panthers. We expect the Falcons to just blow them out there. Lions-Cowboys, usually a good game. Sunday night Bengals at the Giants, and then Monday night Bills at the Jets.
Yeah, we'll see what the Jets can do with Ulrich now as a head coach, see if that gives them any inspiration or not. Boy, the Bengals-Giants just does not sound appetizing for Sunday night.
It does not.
Well, the problem with it is that the Giants have not played well in prime time. So we're going to need the Giants. Daniel Jones, I mean, they were close against Dallas, but they have not looked good in prime time games, and that's a real issue.
Yeah, we get to see both New York area teams on prime time. Jets can win in time in first place.
the country gets to see it, which is sad.
Yeah, and
we're going to watch it anyway, but the country has to see that. That's garbage.
And the other quarterback, Bucks Saints game, Spencer Rattler's in. Derek Carr's out, injured. So Rattler. Gets
shockingly, that you wanted to mention the South Carolina kid.
I know.
All right, that's it for NFL. Let's move over to some college. We had a lot of stuff for college to go through. Some big games last week. Darren, why don't you start it off?
Yeah, I mean, last week was supposed to be a ho-hum week. Not a lot of big games going on. And let me tell you, it was anything but. College football became tumultuous last week. A lot of major upsets, which we're going to get into. But I'm going to start off with just the rest of the ranked teams, just so we know. A&M. The game of the week we had last week blew out Missouri. Never a game. Missouri's first loss. They were not in it. A&M, as you guys both called, and I did not, really just dominated this game. Penn State, Georgia, Ohio State, Boise State, Oregon all rolled. Just to mention a Boise State for a sec, Johnson had 186 yards and 3 touchdowns on 13 carries. Only played the first half. He's averaging like 12 yards a carry for the season. Kev?
I was going to say, 95 carries, over 1,000 yards, 10.9 on the nose there, 16 touchdowns. Incredible.
And right now, plus 220 to win the Heisman. He's the favorite in the Heisman voting right now.
Yep.
We've been talking about him since before the season started. Just want everyone to know. Bragging about us. Indiana had a huge second half to pull away from Northwestern, got to 6-0. Iowa State did the same thing against Baylor. They trailed 14-3, pulled away in the second half. Rocco Bett, Anthony's son, they go to 5-0. Ole Miss really controlled South Carolina on the road. I'm not going to say much about this, Kev. If you want to, you can. It was a ho-hum game. They were never in it.
Just what they need. You know, Ole Miss off the upset the week before come in to smack down South Carolina. South Carolina gets to go on the road this week against another team that was just recently upset last week, Alabama.
Yep, and we'll get more into that in a couple minutes.
Smack down this week, boy. Tough.
Then we got SMU winning at number 22 Louisville, which is a bad loss for Notre Dame. It really is. I mean, that's a game that Notre Dame's banking on, so it sucks. Clemson handled Florida State relatively easily. The game was 16 at the end, but Clemson was in control. A couple of unranked notes real quick. Army and Navy both 5-0 for the first time since 1945. Remember when we watched the games back then. Tulane, 71, UAB, 20. Tulane rushed for over 300 yards, and this week UAB visits Army, who rushes for more than anybody else. So I don't know if that's going to be a good sign for UAB on the road in West Point. Now the Big Five. Well, I'm calling the Big Five because these are the five games that stood out last week with the upsets or dramatic comebacks. I'm going to start with Minnesota, 24, number 11, USC, 17. So here's my question. You got 1 minute left in the game, boys. Just listen to the whole scenario. Game is tied. You have the ball inside your opponent's one, and it's fourth down. What do you do? Inside a minute to go.
Kick a field goal.
I would kick the field goal to take the lead. And I know
Minnesota went for it and scored a touchdown. I was like watching, like, what? What are you doing? I had them plus 8.5, so I wasn't worried about losing my bet. But I was like, Jesus, what are you doing? But they got in. Listen, going into that game, USC not good at stopping the run. Minnesota, that's what they do. USC not great at running the ball. They're good at passing it. Minnesota stops the pass well. That's why I thought there was a good matchup for the Gophers. Big win. Couldn't believe that they went for it, but they did, and they got it. Miami and Cal, Kev. Cal led 35-10 in the third quarter. Cameron Ward. Kevin's cousin came in second week in a row. You want to finish the rest of this one?
Well, they're down 38-18 with 14-13 left. And then Ward, 2 touchdown passes and a touchdown run in the fourth quarter. All 3 extra points. And they pull out a 39-38 win. Ward finishes with 437. And he's the Heisman runner-up.
Yep. He leads the nation in yards and touchdowns right now. Washington 27, Michigan 17. This was only because it was a rematch of last year's championship game. Michigan came in as the 10 seed, Washington unranked. You know, revenge game maybe. Huskies trailed, but they scored the last 13 points of the game. Washington defense played really great. It's not an upset because Washington was favored, but at the same point in time, Michigan is not Michigan anymore, and it's pretty obvious when you're watching it at this point. So that's really what it comes down to. But it wasn't an upset. Any points, Kev?
I was going to say, you look back to the – it's a rematch, but no panics, no McCarthy, no DeBoer, no Harbaugh. A little different teams this year.
No doubt about it. And now they're conference foes.
Yes, they are.
Arkansas 19. Geno is number 4 ranked. Tennessee Volunteers 14. Vols led 14-3 in this game in the third quarter after the Hogs led 3-0 at the break, but the Hogs scored the last 16 of this one. This is the first time that the Tennessee had trailed at the half in 8 games. Arkansas, as usual, blew opportunities. The first half, they had a field goal. Then they went downs, and a missed field goal. But the backup quarterback, Singleton, came in for Green and led the comeback. Green got banged up, and I guess it's just tough to win under the lights in Fayetteville, Kev?
Yeah. Shocking that Tennessee couldn't put up more than the 14. The 2 touchdowns in the third, that was it for them. And like you said, Malachi Singleton came in, scored the game-winning 11-yard touchdown run with a minute left. I am a Leiva. I'm never going to get that name right. Only 158 yards passing. Arkansas dominated. They outgained Tennessee by 100.
They did. They were the better team, actually. First half, second half.
Yeah.
And listen, any SEC team under the lights on the road, you know, there's no easy game there.
There is one easy place to play, isn't there?
We're going to get into it right now. In the upset of the century, not just the week, not the year, not the decade. This is literally the upset of the century. Vandy, who everybody treats and kicks around like they're nothing, beats Bama 40-35. Vanderbilt never trailed. They never trailed. They went up 7-0, then they got a pick 6 to go up 13-0. Never trailed in this game. But even when Bama cut it to 23-21 and they stopped Vandy, Vandy then forced a 3-and-out on Bama and got the ball back. And then on a 4th-and-1 from the 36, they went for it and threw a bomb and hit it, and they went back up by 9 again. Vanderbilt did everything they possibly could. This kid, Pavia, was gritty at New Mexico State. He has let it translate over here to Vanderbilt. Kevin said it, I think, 2 weeks ago. They're going to catch somebody, probably not Alabama, but they're going to catch somebody. You were wrong, Kev. They caught Alabama. They
caught Alabama of all teams.
And, 2 weeks after Saban said, the only place isn't hard to visit in the SEC is Vandy. Vandy 0-60 versus top 5 teams in their history. Bama had 0 sacks in the game, and they dropped back to throw 21 times. Milroe threw the pick 6 early. He got strip sacked later. Kev, yeah, SEC tumultuous craziness.
Road games in the SEC. Under the lights especially, boy, you never know. Like you said, Vandy never trailed. And, you know, Alabama got the late touch on the third quarter to cut it to 2. Vandy field goal. Milroe had the strip sack there. They respond with a touchdown. All of a sudden, from 30-28, they were up 40-28. Alabama did respond with the touchdown and make it 40-35. But then Vandy was able to run out the clock. They got
the first down.
Got the first down they needed and ran out the rest of the clock and won 40-35, stormed the field, tear down the goalposts. The goalposts were lined up in the river after the march through Nashville, 2.5 miles down Broadway.
Vandy hadn't beaten Alabama in 40 years.
And the thing about it that was so cool, so they're up by 5, and it's 2nd-and-12, and they call a pass. Not worried about the clock, and they complete it, and they get the first down. I mean, they didn't just sit on the ball and hope that they make them use their timeouts and give them no time. They actually played the win.
Yeah.
And Coach Lee is a Vanderbilt graduate. It means so much. He played there. He's a Vanderbilt guy. He's coaching there. Clark Lee had not, had a lot of success, but this year he's finally starting to see a little bit. And really excited. He couldn't be happier for a school like Vanderbilt beating up a team like Alabama. Could have been Georgia. Could have been Ole Miss. Could have been any of the big dogs. But very happy for Vandy.
Yep.
So now this week, okay.
Wow.
We've got a couple of big games this week. Okay. You know, you look at it and you got Iowa State at West Virginia, which is an important game there. And you got Kansas State visiting Colorado, which is big. But we're going to focus on 3 games. I'm going to start with a great rivalry. Number 9, Ole Miss visits number 13, LSU. Ole Miss favored by 3.5 under the lights in Death Valley on the road. LSU comes off a bye. LSU hasn't left home in 4 weeks. Ole Miss's Harris may not play. Their leading rusher may not play. A lot of things going on. Ole Miss still the favorite. Any thoughts on this game as we get into it this week?
hard to believe that LSU is a 3.5-point dog in at home. Like I said, especially with Ole Miss coming in with the injury to the running back. You know, Ole Miss righted itself this past weekend, like we said, against South Carolina. But even that, you know, they controlled the game, but Dart played well, but the completion percentage was down around 50%. This is going to be, you know, typical SEC battle under the lights.
Ole Miss, number 2 offense in the country, number 12 defense in the country. This will be their biggest test so far this year.
Well, they lost LSU, one. That was a big test, too.
Right. No, I know. LSU, 4-game win streak after losing game 1 to USC. They have the 66th-ranked defense right now. So,
well, here's the thing. Ole Miss is great against the run. Number 1 in the country, I think, or number 2 right there. And they get a lot of sacks, but you can throw on them. You could also throw on LSU, who's missing Perkins, their best defensive player, who does everything for them. I love the over in this game. And it's 63. It's not like it's a low one, but I can't imagine either one of these teams really stopping the other. So that's the way I kind of view this one. But this is going to be a tight one. But this is one of those cool games if you get a chance to put it on. And there's another game that's competing with it that's equally as good. But this is one of those games. Death Valley is a sick scene when you watch it on TV. I hope the one they catch a game there because it seems so incredible. But, you know, that's going to be one fun one. The second one we're going to touch on, boys, number 1 Texas against number 18 Oklahoma, the Cotton Bowl, Dallas, Texas. 3:30 afternoon, the Texas State Fair. Half the stadium's red, half of it's burnt orange. These two teams don't like each other. The big Ewers is back. Is he healthy? You hope. Oklahoma got stunned Texas last year, but they had a different quarterback who's going to be playing for the next team we talk about in the next big matchup. But usually it doesn't matter who's the better team in this matchup. It's just always a really intense game. Sometimes it's a blowout. Sometimes it's a thriller. Hawkins will start for Oklahoma at quarterback. Kev, thoughts on the Red River rivalry?
Big game. You know, Texas looks so good. They're off the bye week last week. They dropped to 2, back to 1. Like you said, Ewers looks like he's starting. We'll see how healthy he really is. You know, you still have Arch Manning to come in if he's not able to get through the game. But such a rivalry game, you expect something close, I would think. Spreads over 2 touchdowns.
Well, I think it went down to 14 last I saw. It might have went back up to 14 and a half, but it's right around there.
It's right around 2 touchdowns. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot closer game than that. This is always a fun game to watch. Like I said, there is a chance for a blowout. We've seen that a couple times in the past few years also. But I expect it. Typical rivalry, close game here.
Jay, any thoughts on the Red River?
It was actually one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Is there a reason why Texas is such a big favorite in this? It's 14 and a half.
Yeah, well, Oklahoma has offensive problems. They are not scoring while Texas is.
Okay.
And Texas, you know, listen, Oklahoma's also better defensively in this game, even though Texas can match them somewhat defensively. Oklahoma's the stronger defense, but their offense has sputtered. You saw it against Tennessee. They couldn't move the ball. Even though they switched to Hawkins in the second half, they still really couldn't score. But, boys, the big one this week. We go to Outson Stadium, Eugene, Oregon. The game of the week, number 2 Ohio State takes on number 3, the Oregon Ducks, in Eugene, 7:30 on Fox, so you can watch it. Spreads 3.5 for Ohio State on the road. Neither team has been tested much this year with competition. Both teams have played Michigan State, however, and kind of beat them relatively handily. Gabriel's completing 78% of his passes for Oregon. Howard completing 71% of his passes for Ohio State. Jeremiah Smith, who doesn't get talked about like Ryan Williams, is another freshman phenom wide receiver for Ohio State. Both teams have good running backs. Boys, why don't we start with you, Kev? What are you thinking in the game of the week? Who do you like? Do you like Ohio State or do you like Oregon? 3.5-point spread.
In our preseason, I had Ohio State as one of my 2 final teams. They're the more complete team, I think, both offense and defense-wise. But this is in Oregon. Oregon can match them, I think, point for point. Oregon's defense, I don't think, is as strong as Ohio State. But this is a huge test for both teams. The first time they're meeting up as a Big Ten rivals. And, you know, again, at home under the lights. I like Oregon to cover, and probably I'll take Oregon to win outright. I think they can pull off the upset at home.
I have a hunch I know where this man is going, but Gino, who do you have in this one?
No, actually, I like Oregon. I think it's a close game, and Oregon at home getting 3.5 points. I like Oregon in this game.
Well, I thought you were going to pick Oregon because you picked them to win the division, so that's why I said it when we did the prelim. That was your team. I also like Oregon in this game. Here's the thing. Oregon is stronger on the Ohio State offensive line has not been that good this year. Okay, it just really has not. Oregon has like the sixth best pressure rate in the country right now. Ohio State's like 53rd in blocking up there. I think that Oregon can control the line of scrimmage. I think it's a nip-tuck game. I also think Oregon's going to win this game outright. All three of us going for the underdog Ducks at home in their first real big Big Ten test. And that's college football for the week. Now let's go to the picks.
So I think we're all picking the Red River Rivalry as well.
Sure.
That one, since we mentioned it before, I had Oklahoma. I'm taking them plus a 14.5 against Texas. Again, being the rivalry game, it's over 2 touchdowns. I'll take the dog there. Other games I like, I don't see how Pitt's only given 3 points at home against Cal. I'll take Pitt minus a 3 versus Cal. And I'll take BYU minus 4 at home against Arizona.
Okay.
You know,
I like Texas minus the points against Oklahoma. I already picked Oregon. My next game is going to be Tennessee. I think they get back on the winning ways. Dylan Sampson, he's going to carry the ball a lot. Tennessee minus 15.5. It's a little bit of a big number, but I think they get the win here. And my last game is going to be I'm taking Ole Miss minus the 3.5 against LSU. Darren?
All right. Well, Kev stole my Pitt pick, but that's all right.
Wow.
I'm taking Maryland laying 10.5 against Northwestern this week. I think Maryland bounces back off the bye, has a good week. Northwestern has trouble scoring the ball. I think that Maryland finds a way. That's my second. My third pick, you know, I had Tennessee listed as one of them as well. I'm going to take Washington State laying 3.5 at Fresno State. I think they're off the bye. I think Washington State will be ready to play. I think they have a little bit too much offense for Fresno State, and I think they find a way to win. In the Red River rivalry, I'm going to stick with Geno. I'm going to take Texas to win this game by 3 scores. I think that they win this game probably 38-21, something like that, maybe 35-17, somewhere in that range. So I'm going to take those will be my picks. Back to you, my friend.
Okay. So we are on the verge of the NHL season starting.
It already has.
About 4 hours ago.
Well, actually, the Devils played a doubleheader over the weekend in Prague.
Correct. So we're going to talk a little hockey. Just to note, to make the playoffs, Devils are at minus 425, Rangers at minus 350, Islanders at minus 125 to make the playoffs. For Stanley Cup favorites, Edmonton plus 800, Florida and Dallas at plus 1100, the Devils at plus 1200, Toronto, the Rangers, Colorado, and Carolina at plus 1300, the Islanders plus 4500, and Darren, had to throw it in for you, Calgary's at plus 7500.
Yes.
Just some odds for Stanley Cup and locals to make the playoffs. So we're just gonna give a minute or two about the three locals. Kev, you want to start with the Islanders?
Yeah. So the Islanders, Patrick Waugh, his first full season as a head coach here. He of course joined them, I think, in December last year. The key for them, I'll start from the goalie out. Off-season surgery for Sorokin. He's back. You know, we'll see how healthy he is early. Varlamov is still there as the backup. Key for them is Sorokin getting back to how he looked 2 years ago and dominating. The defense is going to be about the health line defense. You know, last year, Pelech, Pulak, and Mayfield all missed a lot of games there. If you get those three playing healthy and able to play 70-plus games with Dobson and Romanov back there, they'll be fine on defense. Some changes up front. They still return Horvat and Barzell and Nelson. They added Anthony Duclair, who was a consistent 20-plus goal scorer. And the big free agent signing they made in from Russia was Maxim Siplikov. He's going to be probably in the top six as well. A couple of changes more at the bottom. No more Matt Martin. No more Kyle Clutterbuck. So the energy line is gone. Only Casey Zizekas is there. Wallstrom's going to be down to the fourth line. Maybe some youth in there. Maybe is what they need. Try to get a little deeper there. Pierre Engvall was placed on waivers, even though he has 6 years left on his contract. And they open up. And yes, the schedule is correct. They open up at home against the Utah Hockey Club, formerly known as the Arizona Coyotes. And
one thing just to note, they have a rookie in the minors, the Islanders, William Dufour. 56 goals last year, 116 games in the minors. Not sure if he's actually going to make it up to the club this year, but on the horizon, could get up here. And from everything that I've heard, he's a fantastic goal scorer. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. But a lot of the middle forwards there, Palmieri, Pajot, McLean, Lee, Holmstrom are all back. So it's very similar to last year. Little changes at the bottom, the fourth line. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same roster as last year. We'll see if the health improves their standing.
And big change from last year, no 13-game road trip to start the year, which is...
That helps.
5-6-2 in that 13-game road trip because they were still working on UBS Arena. So yeah. Hopefully that helps the cause, as they say. Darren, why don't you talk to us about the Rangers for a couple minutes?
So here's the Rangers. Rangers went pretty far last year, but got knocked out by Florida late. Couple of subtractions. They lose Blake Wheeler, who didn't really do much for them. He got hurt most of the year. Barkley Goodrow was an important cog, though, for them on faceoffs. Eric Gustafson had, was timely with his goals from the blue line. Alex Wenberg was a midseason, trade that they acquired him for, and Jack Roslovic also gone. The big adds were Riley Smith and Sam Carrick. And Carrick actually scored the first goal of the year for the Rangers tonight and a 6-0 drubbing of the Penguins on the road. Listen, the thing about, Riley Smith is he had 40 points last year, 13 goals, 27 assists in 76 games with the Penguins. He won the Stanley Cup with Vegas the year before that. He's always been a guy that, scores timely goals. Carrick was a one-year, $1 million guy. He had some points last year, too, with Anaheim and then Edmonton. Only had one assist in the finals, though, but he did score the opening goal. This team's going to be all about, basically how well Shesterkin plays if he gets distracted. The Rangers offered him an 8-year, $88 million contract, which would have made the highest paid goalie of all time, and he rejected it. So now it's going to be all about the Rangers finding a way to get Shesterkin happy because he is an all-world goaltender. Tonight you saw some – it's game one, but, Kreider put in two. Lafreniere put one in. Trocheck put one in. Carrick, like I said, Hedl scored. This team was, they were clicking on all cylinders tonight. When I look at this team, Panarin has to have the big season like he had last year. And will Kako finally show up? Because he was this highly touted guy that really hasn't done anything. And the other thing is Lafreniere for real, or was the last year a fluke? Zibanejad is a star. They have a lot of things that you like about him. On defense, where I thought they lost the series to Florida, Fox and Miller looked a little bit slow trying to keep up with the Florida offensive speed. And they are the front line again on defense. So you want to see if those guys are going – if it was injuries and being slowed and banged up, or if these guys are really a step too slow and they have to try to come up with another guy to help out in the first pairing and defenseman because maybe Fox isn't the guy. And the other question about this team is always Truba. Is he going to commit enough dumb penalties as the captain to make you want to, smack him in the head and want him off the team? Because Jacob Truba does a lot of things that are crazy, and especially with Ryan Lindgren banged up and VC might be on long-term IR, there's a lot of question marks, about leadership on this team, and Truba's going to have to be a little bit better than he was. This team has all the talent to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals, get to the Stanley Cup Finals or back to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's going to really come down to if the defensemen can hold up against the speed teams that they have to go up against. Gino, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the New Jersey Devils?
So Devils, they've already started the year 2-0. You mentioned it before. They played in the Global Series in Prague. They beat Buffalo 2 games, so they already start 2-0. Outlook for this team depends on 3 things. They didn't make the playoffs this year. They need to make the playoffs this year. 1, new coach. Sheldon Keefe takes over as the coach. 2 is the goalie situation. They've added Jacob Markstrom from Calgary. They've added Jake Allen from Montreal. The 2 goalies are Allen is a good goalie. Markstrom could be a really good goalie. They're going to depend on him. And the 3rd is the young core. So Jack Hughes needs to stay healthy. We'll see if he can hit 100 points. 2 years ago, he hit 99. They have 20-year-old Simon Nemec on defense. Kid's going to be a star. They acquired Brent Pesce from Carolina. Signed him to a 6-year contract. Big defenseman, 6'3". And they brought in Paul Cottle from Vegas. They brought him in for his leadership. You know, Timo Meier, Nico Hischier, Jesper Bratt, they have enough young core guys that they need them to play well. They need the good goalie play. This is a team that should make the playoffs. We'll find out if they do. They've already started out really well at 2-0 against Buffalo. So we will find out as we go through this. Darren.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about college basketball before we get to NFL picks?
Just one minor thing. Guys, we're less than a month away from the season starting. Everybody's warming up and getting ready to go. There's a lot of excitement about Duke with Cooper Flagg being perhaps the number one player in the country, but actually a freshman in the country. But actually, a lot of people are also talking about the Rutgers team with Harper being the number one player in the country. So there's a lot of things that could go, you know, interesting in that, and the fact that Rutgers normally is not the recruiting juggernaut, but they are right now, which is pretty cool. They also got a top 5 player in Ace Bailey, and Gonzaga has officially joined the Pac-12 for basketball. They're a non-football school, so the Pac-12 to keep their football, rights going will need and to qualify will need an 8th team. I'm sure they'll find someone that'll be willing to join. But Gonzaga going to a major conference, so they'll be leaving the conference that they've dominated, the West Coast Conference, after all these years. Be interesting to see if they get St. Mary's to join them. Maybe that would not be a bad combination and keep the basketball rivalry going. That's all I had in college basketball.
Okay, Yankees have completed the win tonight, so they beat Kansas City 3-2 in Game 3. They are now up 2-1. We'll find out who is actually going to start Game 4. And the Dodgers currently are up 5-0 on San Diego. Kev?
2 deaths in sports this past week. 1, and this is a guy that if you're at least in your 50s, You've watched him pitch. You imitated his windup, his twists, his turns, back to the mat, back to the home plate, back to the batter. Louis Tiant passed away at 80-something years old. Boy, you look at the stats, you know, between 73 and 76, just to show how the game has changed. 85 complete games in those 4 years. And somewhere between 260 and 312 innings pitched in each of the 4 years. Incredible numbers.
Louis Tiant was, I mean, like we saw him, he always looked like he was as out of shape fat guy, but he could really pitch.
Yeah. And the other death yesterday, Tuesday, probably the quiet, unsung member of the New York Stock Exchange, Abdul Salam, passed away, some complications from diabetes. So the first member of the Stock Exchange to pass away. When we were growing up as, you know, much younger folks, Jet fans, with him and Lions and of course Klecko and Gastineau. Salam was a quiet guy, but geez, he was so unsung. He was such a great teammate. And Gastineau credits Salam with a lot of Gastineau success.
Nice. Okay. Salam was a great player.
All right. We will move to NFL picks. I don't have them up from last week, unfortunately, but Darren, you've been going last a lot, so we're going to give you honors to start today.
All right. I don't like anything this week. I couldn't find a lot I liked. I got to be honest with you.
Me too.
I'm going to I'm going to start with Tennessee laying 2.5 against Indy, coming off the bye. They won their last game. Maybe they're feeling good about themselves. I there's things I like about Flacco. There's things I don't like about Flacco. I think that Tennessee can get pressure on the quarterback. Their defense has been pretty good all year. I'm going to take the Tennessee Titans in game one. Game two, I'm taking the Packers laying 5 against Arizona at home. I think they're just better. Arizona did have a nice road win last week, but I just think that the Packers are a little bit better. So I'm going to take them. And number three, because I think someone will go up against me, I'm going to take Dallas +3 against Detroit. I think that Dallas at home is always a tough bet. I know that they haven't looked great this year, but they had a pretty good matchup against Pittsburgh last week, which will be a better defense than they're going to face against Detroit. I think this is an over game, if you want to bet an over-under, because I think both teams will score a lot of points. But I do think that Dallas will find a way to get the W against the Detroit Lions. And those are my three picks. Kev?
Yeah, I'll take the bait. I'm taking Detroit. Even though they were in Dallas, I'll take Detroit lane to 3 at the Cowboys. My second game.
You want to take the under as well? You want to go 2 for 2?
No. I mean, that game's got, 38-28 written all over it.
52 over under, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I would put it over. My second game, this is more of picking against a bad team. I'm taking the Falcons -6 at the Panthers. Cousins throwing for 500 yards. It looks like the offense is starting to break out here. They're one of the favorites in that division. I think they're going to take care of the Panthers pretty easily there. And the third game, I was leaning towards the Texans -7 of the Patriots, but without Nico Collins, that just scares me a little bit.
And by the way, Nico Collins put on IR today, by the way.
Yep. He's out at least 4 weeks there.
Yep.
I'm going to take the Eagles -9.5 against the Browns. I know it's a big number, but the Browns just look dead. Deshaun Watson needs to be benched. They need to give Jameis Winston a shot in there. And until they do, I just don't see the Browns being somebody you can bet on. So I'm going to take the Eagles laying the 9.5 there.
Okay. My first game, I'm taking Pittsburgh -3 against the Raiders. I think Aiden O'Connell, Raiders, Davante Adams issues. I don't think they're ready for this. My second game is I'm going to go against Darren, and I'm going to take Arizona +5. Arizona's got a little something going on. And you know what? They may not win this game, but I like the 5. I could see this being a late field goal game. Arizona +5 is my second choice. And my third choice, I was all over the map on this. I didn't know where I was going to go. I wanted to take Washington so badly +6.5 against the Baltimore Ravens, but I can't. I'm taking Cincinnati -3.5 against the Giants. That's my third pick for the NFL Week 6.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up, boys? No, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the Mets have found their way into the National League Championship Series. Congratulations to all you Metsies out there. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Audio Boom, Spotify, whatever you like. If you have the inkling to do so, please follow us on social media. We are on Instagram and Facebook. We are posting a lot of stuff. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you think, what you don't think, all that fun stuff. Like, share, and tell everybody about it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.